Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
The first case for oral argument this morning is Daktronics Appellant versus LBW Tech Company, Inc. For the appellant, Ms. Rochelle Cundy and Mr. Roberto Lang. I understand, Ms. Cundy, you'll be presenting the opening argument of 20 minutes, and then Mr. Lang, you'll do the rebuttal. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And for the appellee, LBW Tech, we have Mr. Alan F. Glover, an attorney from Brookings. You may proceed, Ms. Cundy, at 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. Your honors, this case presents one question of law that this court may decide upon a de novo review of the record. Does the assertion of personal jurisdiction over defendants Lang Tang and LBW Tech Co. violate the due process clause? Your honors, the facts that the parties do not dispute in this case are sufficient to establish that jurisdiction is appropriate under the due process clause. In addition, the precedent of this court and the United States Supreme Court authorizes that jurisdiction. And jurisdiction over the defendants gives South Dakota residents confidence that they may pursue South Dakota courts as a forum to dispute for all their disputes. And therefore, assertion of jurisdiction over the defendants is appropriate. As the court is well aware, personal jurisdiction is a two-prong analysis. First, the long-arm statute, and second, the due process clause. In this case, the trial court found that the long-arm statute was satisfied, and that issue is not before this court. The only issue today is whether due process authorizes jurisdiction over the defendants. This court has construed due process as a three-part test. First is the purposeful availment prong. We must consider whether or not the defendants purposely availed themselves of the privilege of doing business in South Dakota. Contacts of the defendant must be more than random, fortuitous, or attenuated, and they cannot be the result of the actions of a third party. In this case, Your Honors, the defendants knowingly established contacts with South Dakota and with Daktronics. They are not here because of the actions of a third party. Ms. Tang herself traveled to South Dakota to discuss the opportunity of doing business with Daktronics.
Was she invited or did she come on her own volition?
That, Your Honor, is in dispute. There's evidence in the record that suggests that Ms. Tang was invited. Daktronics, however, remembers through the affidavit of Dan Chase that Ms. Tang herself proposed the idea of coming to South Dakota and meeting with Daktronics.
Should it make a difference who solicited who?
Justice Konecamp, it should not. That is but one contact that defendants have with South Dakota. We must look at the entire circumstances surrounding this transaction to determine the significance and the number of the contacts that defendants have with this state. We have to look at their negotiations. We have to look at the contract itself, and we also have to look at performance under that contract.
Wasn't she reimbursed by Daktronics for the trip?
Yes, she was, Justice Saber.
Which kind of supports the fact that she was invited. I mean, if she voluntarily came herself to solicit business, she's likely to have paid for her own trip, wouldn't she?
That fact is not in the record, Justice Sabers, and so it's hard to speculate as to what the relationship between the parties was. These are businesses that do business all over the world, and therefore they're quite familiar with the process of negotiations and whether or not in their businesses one typically pays for their own expenses in the courtship phase of the relationship is not in the record.
The purposeful availment, though, of the privilege, hasn't that been the privilege of conducting activities within South Dakota? What facts support that she was going to conduct activities within South Dakota?
Justice Meyerhunter, I believe that the defendant's actions herself her willingness to come to South Dakota, her communications with South Dakota. A defendant does not actually have to be in South Dakota and conducting business, purchasing something from a store on Main Street in Pierce, South Dakota. They purposely can avail themselves through the benefits of technology. And in fact, the United States Supreme Court has recognized that that is very much the case in our modern day society, where technology supports the transaction of business quite easily.
But, and so, but to follow up on that, what business relationship was going to be utilized in South Dakota by this trip and this contact? I mean, this is, even Burger King says, simply entering into a contract is not enough. You have to avail yourself of business opportunities in the state. And I don't see anything here other than entering into this contract where they were going to enter into contracts or do business with South Dakota residents.
Justice Sinner, I would refer to the contract itself as evidence. You're correct that a contract alone is not sufficient, but this contract clearly contemplated future consequences and future obligations between the parties.
Only under this contract.
Only under this contract, certainly. But, Your Honor, they were significant contacts and significant obligations. This was a contract that contemplated a 3-year engagement under which Ms. Tang received $15,000 a month. So she was definitely receiving the benefit of doing business with Daktronics in South Dakota. And in fact, the contract itself recognizes that Daktronics is a business located in Brookings, South Dakota, and it construes the defendants as an international business that has consulting company personnel in the United States and in China. So it clearly supports the conclusion that defendants contemplated that they were going to enter into a long-term contract with a South Dakota corporation and receive the benefits of that contract. And the performance under the contract shows that defendants did exactly that. This action, the three causes of action we've asserted here are deceit, negligent misrepresentation, and we've also have a claim for declaration of liabilities under the contract. Now, those three actions arise from the negotiations, the terms of the contract itself, and the performance thereunder. If you look at the contract, at Appendix B on page 11, this is a draft that Ms. Tang created herself of her working plan, and it clearly references projects in the Zhebei province of China. Now, during her negotiations in South Dakota, she discussed her success with the Zhebei province and her ability to get business for Daktronics there, as evidenced by Dan Chase's declaration, which is also in the appendix of the brief at page 52. Clearly, these actions arise out of Ms. Tang's contacts with South Dakota before and after the contract was entered. Absent her activities, we wouldn't be here today, Your Honors. There would be no action that Daktronics would have against Ms. Tang. It's because of her actions directed at South Dakota through her communications via telephone and email, her negotiations in South Dakota when she met with the representatives of Daktronics, and her performance under the contract that this case has arisen. Those contacts show that jurisdiction over the defendants here is reasonable. Daktronics is located in Brookings. It's organized under the laws of South Dakota, and its principal place of business, its worldwide headquarters, are in Brookings, South Dakota. Defendants are organized under the state of Nevada. They do business principally in California, and the performance of this contract, the place of performance for the defendants was China. The contract itself never mentions California except for when it recognizes where the location of the defendants was at that time. Daktronics' obligations under this contract are to pay Ms. Tang $15,000 a month plus a 6% project success fee. They do so from their headquarters in Brookings, When Ms. Tang sought reimbursement, she sought it from Brookings. When Ms. Tang disputed payment under the contract, she contacted Reese Kurtenbach in Brookings. This dispute is the result of Ms. Tang's actions directed at South Dakota. The precedent of this court establishes that jurisdiction over the defendants is appropriate. And I reference the court to the American Bankers case. In American Bankers, an insurance company bought contracts with South Dakota residents. They did not establish those contracts themselves. They had no willing obligation. They, on no part of their own, did they enter into a direct contract with a resident of South Dakota.
But the difference is American Bankers, because of their availment, they were then required to collect premiums and pay claims to South Dakota citizens on an ongoing basis in the future. Isn't that a huge difference?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor, because of the fact that the obligations under the contract before the court clearly contemplated performance for 3 years, and the performance on Daktronics' part was to take place in South Dakota. The performance on the part of the defendants was to take place in China. In the American Bankers case, the insurance company received claims and processed claims in Texas. They had no relationship with South Dakota. They were not performing any business here. But yet the court still found that jurisdiction was appropriate because of the ongoing contractual obligation between the insurance company and South Dakota residents. The court also recognized that the defendants received a steady economic gain from the claims and from their obligations to South Dakota. In this case, the same element is present. Ms. Tang received a steady economic gain, $15,000 a month, due to her relationship with the South Dakota Corporation. And she knowingly established that on her own behalf. She negotiated that contract. She engaged in communications with Daktronics, and she herself assumed the responsibilities and the privileges of that contract. The Denver truck case that's relied on by the defendants here is distinguishable. In that case, it was a contract between two Colorado entities. One Colorado entity was a subsidiary of a South Dakota entity. The subject of the contract was in Colorado, the property where the contract was to be performed, and the performance was also in Colorado. There were no negotiations in South Dakota, and the court recognized that at most there were three communications between the parties. On those, because there was so little contacts with South Dakota, and because the contract was to be performed in another state and was between residents of another state, this court refused to assert jurisdiction in that instance. I would ask the court to look at the Burger King case also, because there's one important part of the Burger King case that I believe I cannot state any better than the United States Supreme Court stated itself. It's at 471 U.S. 374-374. In that case, the court recognizes that a state has a manifest interest in providing its residents with a convenient forum for redressing injuries inflicted by out-of-state actors. Do we want defendants to be able to enter into a business contract with residents of South Dakota, establish an ongoing obligation to residents of South Dakota, yet escape jurisdiction of the South Dakota courts when a dispute arises from that obligation? Your Honor, this is not an isolated transaction. This is not a resident of South Dakota ordering something off the internet or from a catalog that they have no idea where the location of that defendant might be. This is a situation where we have a South Dakota corporation that entered into a contract upon the negotiations and the contacts from a defendant that resides out of state. Ms. Tang was plainly pitching her ability to do business in China, and she received the benefit of her negotiations under the contract. As the United States Supreme Court says, it may well be unfair to allow such a defendant to escape having to account in other states for consequences that arise proximately from those activities. The Due Process Clause may not be wielded as a territorial shield to avoid interstate obligations that have been voluntarily assumed. Your Honors, in this case, we have a voluntary assumption of an obligation, even more so than in the American Bankers case. Also in the American Bankers case, this court broadly construed the second prong of jurisdiction, the directed at prong, because in that case, the state was suing the insurance company. It was not a bad faith action between the parties to the contract itself, but this court recognized in American Bankers that the subject matter flowed directly from the economic consequences that the defendant established in South Dakota. The same is true of this case. The defendants were well aware before, during, and after the negotiation of the contract that they were dealing with a South Dakota corporation. They entered into an ongoing obligation with a South Dakota corporation, and when they submitted status reports, they did not submit them to an office in California. When they sought reimbursement, they didn't submit their reimbursement request to an office in California. All of those communications came to Daktronics worldwide headquarters in Brookings, South Dakota. Most importantly, when the defendants sought to dispute payment, they contacted Reese Kurtenbach in Brookings, South Dakota. There's no dispute in the record that the defendants knew exactly that they were dealing with a corporation organized under the laws of South Dakota with its principal place of business in South Dakota. The defendants had fair warning that their actions and their relationship with the South Dakota corporation could subject them to the jurisdiction of the courts of this state. The number and significance of their contacts show that jurisdiction satisfies traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. In this case, the assertion of jurisdiction over the defendants does not violate due process. And for that reason, Daktronics respectfully requests that this court reverse the dismissal of its action against the defendants and remand this case to the circuit court.
I have a question. On the cases that you've cited, do any of them deal with a consultant kind of contract like we have here?
Justice Mary Henry, I don't believe they do. There is one case from Kansas that deals with a patent, but I don't believe there are any consultant cases that jump to my mind right away. Unfortunately, this is a situation where it is a consultant agreement, but that doesn't denigrate the significance of the contract itself and the long-term obligations for both parties arising under that contract. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Glover, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Justices. The key that I see involved in this case is not a tough factual dispute. As a matter of fact, I think Judge Guinep pointed out that the facts based upon the affidavits were pretty much the same, or they're not in dispute. He characterized it as that the plaintiffs in this case put a little different spin on the facts. But all in all,
you know, following up on that, didn't Judge Guinep perhaps not look at it in the light most favorable to Daktronics? There was a concern. I mean, he seemed to almost go with your version of the facts as opposed to the other side, which the case law would say that he should have looked at it the other way. Is that a problem?
I agree with what you state the case law to be, Ms. Justice. But, however, I do not think that he did. In fact, I'm going to try and outline what I think was really undisputed facts. I think it's interesting that the first thing we get to is, how did these people find my client? And it's undisputed from the facts in this case that it was Daktronics employee who said, I know this person in California who's doing business in China. It was they who sought out the services of Ms. Tang. That is not disputed under any of the facts. And counsel for the appellant states that basically the facts establish that they're not certain who invited who to come to South Dakota. But the only thing that I can find in the record of the affidavits was the affidavit of Dan Chase, who states that it was, he doesn't state who it was that sought him out. But I don't think I think if you look at what the facts are, Daktronics really doesn't dispute the fact that it was their contact with my client that was initiated by their employee, and there's no real dispute on who paid for the trip. Now, Daktronics didn't talk about that in any of their affidavits. They never said a word.
If I understand your opposing counsel, she doesn't think it makes any difference who contacted who. Apparently, you disagree because you're emphasizing this point.
I do disagree with that. I think it goes to the issue of whether or not it was the defendant who purposely availed herself of a privilege of acting in the forum state.
But setting aside who made the first contact, after that, isn't there a dispute of fact about the courtship, if you might, maybe be an analogy, who was pursuing who after that? And isn't that a significant fact?
It could be a significant fact, Mr. Justice, but I don't think that, once again, that the affidavits are clear on that.
That brings me back to the point Justice Meyer Henry raised. If that's the case, then don't we have an obligation to treat the opposing side's case as having established a prima facie case and defer this until an evidentiary hearing? That appears to be what the law requires.
I concur with your statement as to what the law requires, Mr. Justice, but I think we need to look at what the affidavits set forth. And in the affidavits, you'll note, Judge Genep noted, that what took place when my client was brought to South Dakota, the parties, there were some allegations on the part of appellants in this case that the contract was negotiated in South Dakota. The affidavits don't establish that. All of the affidavits are fairly silent on that, but the most detailed affidavit was the affidavit that was submitted by appellees from Mr. Nestel, who was the Daktronics employee, who says, I'm the one that pointed out them to my client. We contacted Brookings. They invited her out. She came out. She spent one day. There was no significant contract negotiations in South Dakota. They were looking at her. They were in finding out what she did and what she had. In fact, the affidavit establishes that there was not an offer made to employ Ms. Tang for approximately a month, until approximately a month after that South Dakota visit. And that proposal was submitted by Daktronics to her. And that's when the negotiations took place by either phone or email between the parties in South Dakota and in California as to what the terms of the contract were to be. There's not any real issue about what the purpose of the consulting was to be. Daktronics needed an inn in China. My client purported to be able to provide that inn in China. Which leads me to take the next step on that three-prong criteria, and
before,
that is...
Before you get there...
Certainly.
You know, I guess I have to differ from you based on William Nestel's affidavit. And I realize that he originally worked for Daktronics, but he no longer did at the time of the affidavit, right?
That is correct, Mr. Justice.
Well, it seems to me he directly countered just about every point that Daktronics were making. First of all, he said he didn't even know who Todd Gunn was. He had never met him. He had saved business cards, and he never had one from Todd Gunn. He says he was the individual that Todd Gunn referred to in the affidavit, and then he says that something about, I think he said it was completely false. The reference that he made. So don't we have just a really, as opposed to the facts being stipulated or agreed upon, we really have a different version of the facts being presented by Nestel, and that Judge Genap latched onto them, which is basically not proper under the law, in that he's supposed to view the evidence or view the affidavits in the light most favorable to Daktronix, supporting jurisdiction.
Mr. Justice, my comment on that is this. Mr. Gunn appears nowhere in the appellant's brief. Why? This was their affidavit. The judge essentially ignored the affidavit of Mr. Gunn. Why? Because it was purely based upon evidence that he had no personal knowledge of. It appears to me that Judge Genap, and with good reason, completely ignored the affidavit of Mr. Gunn. And, sure, why? It's interesting. Mr. Gunn's affidavit is not even mentioned in appellant's brief. It's not relied upon in appellant's brief. It is completely ignored, and well, it should have been. He had no involvement in this. He was making an affidavit as general counsel of Daktronix about information that was purely secondhand to him, and I admit that Mr. Nestel disagreed with it. Now, having said that,
they say, paragraph 8 of Nestel's affidavit says, Ms. Ling Tang approached Bill Nestel in Daktronix Los Angeles, California office about doing business with Daktronix. Then Nestel's statement is, this statement is completely false. And then he sets out what his reference is. And I realize Nestel is more specific, but I mean, that's completely countering. To me, that seems like an important point, and it seems like Judge Genap has taken the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendants rather than the plaintiff.
And my answer to that, Mr. Justice, is what other affidavit of plaintiffs confirms what Mr. Gunn alleged took place? None. None of the other affidavits were specifically addressed those issues. The Daktronix affidavits were general in nature. The affidavit that we supplied by Mr. Nestel specified, got specific. Now, to the second issue, which requires the three prong, the cause of action must arise from the defendant's activities directed at South Dakota. The whole purpose of this contract had nothing to do with South Dakota.
But it didn't have anything to do with California either.
Other than the fact that the appellee in this case resided in California but was being retained and hired to do work in China.
Isn't that the problem here because of it is a consulting contract? And in this day and age when you've got the global economy, where is the jurisdiction when you have a consulting contract? Should it be the headquarters of the company?
Well, I think we'd ought to at least give some consideration, Mr. Justice, to the fact of where the consulting is to take place. That's the contracted work.
But this is China is where this is going to take place. Now, we certainly aren't going to send both parties over to China to go to the courts in China. They have to be in the United States, I would assume. And I don't see any more contacts in California than there are in South Dakota.
Other than the initial contact took place in California by a Daktronix employee, contact Ms. Tang. She didn't know anything about Daktronix. She had no knowledge about it. It isn't like she was contacting Daktronix and saying, I've got this good contacts in China. Let me come and tell you what I can do. This was a case that was initiated and followed up by Daktronix.
Now, are there any cases that you have cited that deal with consulting contracts and your argument about the initial contact?
No, there is not. There are none. And getting to the final, the defendant must have a substantial connection with South Dakota to make the exercise of jurisdiction reasonable. Where is that substantial connection? The only thing we've got is a contract between the two that there's going to be providing consulting services, but this is clearly, all of the activity to take place is going to be taking place in China. As a matter of fact, the very topic of the litigation, if you look to the complaint and the litigation involved, it involves the activities of the defendant in China. Nothing about South Dakota. The only thing that's in South Dakota about this thing at all is that Vectronics representative signed the contract that was negotiated essentially by phone between the parties, with the first proposal being submitted by Daktronics. When the parties were able to finally agree upon a term of a contract, it was signed by South Dakota in South Dakota, signed by Ling Tang in California, and then they proposed then the work to be done under this contract was all to take place in China. Nothing in South Dakota. And I think that those are significant circumstances that the trial court took into consideration. If you look at all of the affidavits, every affidavit that was filed by the appellants in this case were general affidavits, with the exception of Mr. Gunn's, who was specific, but as the court found, it was based on second-hand information. And I truly think that the court did ignore the affidavit of Mr. Gunn. I think he was justified in doing so, based upon the fact that there was no real basis. It was secondhand knowledge, and I think it's interesting that the appellants in this case, when the affidavit of their own former employee was filed, saying Mr. Gunn doesn't know what he's talking about, he wasn't even around at the time this thing was negotiated, there was never any response to that.
Did the appellants ask for an evidentiary hearing in order to flesh out these disputed facts?
No, they did not, Mr. Justice.
Did you?
I did not, Mr. Justice. So, based upon these circumstances, we think, as I went through the facts, I think that the undisputed facts, if I can just basically summarize them for you, it's not disputed that the plaintiffs and defendants entered into a contract, that the plaintiff's corporation and its primary place of business is Brookings, and that's not disputed. And defendant is a Nevada corporation with its primary place of business in California, not disputed. Dan Chase, an employee that was involved with Daktronics China operations, and he had discussed Daktronics China operations with William Nessel. That's not disputed. It was Mr. Nessel who referred Ling Tang to Mr. Chase and representatives of Daktronics. I don't believe that was disputed. Mr. Nessel was at all pertinent times an employee of Daktronics. It was Daktronics who made the first contact with Tang. Lin Tang's trip at the request of Daktronics and was paid for by Daktronics. The contract, which was entered into with Daktronics, was signed in Brookings and Tang signing in California. Not disputed. There was telephone conversations between Tang and Daktronics, some of which were initiated by Daktronics, some of which may have been initiated by Tang for the purposes of clarifying primarily and also reporting what was being done after the contract was entered into. LBW Tech duties in connection with the contractual relationship were focused on being performed in the state of California and China. That was not disputed. And the affidavit of Todd Gunn does not contain firsthand knowledge, but is based upon information as he received in his capacity with Daktronics. That's not disputed.
What about the fact that this contract involved and contemplated a relatively long-term business relationship that required Daktronics to make payments, you know, over the 3 years?
I'm not sure that the term is as significant, Mr. Justice, as where it was to be performed. I think that's more significant. the fact that all of this work and the context we made were going to be made by the defendant whose basis is in California and who has contacts in China. I think that it's easy to contemplate that Daktronics did not have to go to China in order to make contact with the defendant. They had to communicate with him or contact him in California, which was their home base for operations, which, if there's any business purpose, would be that at least the state of California comes into play in that. But
that would make it the same as American Bankers, then.
I don't believe it's quite the same, Mr. Justice, for that reason I think the significance in this case is who is the initiator in this case. In this case, it's clear that Daktronics initiated this entire thing. Why would Ms. Tang have any reason to believe that because she was invited to come and look over this Daktronics operation and would enter into a consulting contract for Daktronics business in China, why would she have any reason to believe that she is all of a sudden submitting herself to the personal jurisdiction of the state of South Dakota?
Let's reverse it for a minute. Let's say that the contract had gone on about that amount of time and Daktronics failed to make the $15,000 a month payment, and that Ms. Tang then brought suit in California against Daktronics for non-payment of the $15,000 a month. Would, in your mind, would that be a violation of due process to require that there's no due process enough to have enough contacts in California for that suit?
Mr. Justice, I do not. In fact, I think that's the case. I think that we've alleged or shown in the affidavits that the defendant has, in fact, initiated suit in federal court in California against Daktronics based upon contract performance, which is still pending. But I think that
have you raised the jurisdictional question there?
We have not. I think that Daktronics has.
Now, wait a minute. You're Daktronics.
No, I represent LBW and Lisa and Tang.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was confused. Thank you.
Based on my conclusion is that there's no reasonable basis to reverse the decision of Judge Keenan in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glover. Mr. Lang, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court and counsel, the law of personal jurisdiction is well established. What is at issue here is the application of the law to the facts, and the facts here are somewhat disputed. There are specific affidavits in the record from Daktronics detailing what communications Ling Tang on behalf of LBW Tech had with Daktronics. The Reese Kurtenbach affidavit, the Jim Morgan affidavit, and the Daniel Chase declaration are specific as to the communications that occurred. What happened here is Ling Tang and Bill Nestle somehow met. Tang called Mr. Chase in South Dakota to discuss coming to Brookings for a meeting. Did she come on her own volition? Of course she did. She boarded the plane herself and came.
Do you think that is the crux of this case and who made the initial contact?
I do not. There is some recognition that who reached out to whom may matter in the context of a sale of a product or a one-time relationship. I think it's clear here that both parties were reaching out to each other. After all, they entered into a consulting agreement that is contemplating a three-year term where there's a relationship that's ongoing. So I don't think the case rises or falls on that. And I also think it's clear in the record, particularly from the declaration of Daniel Chase, that Ling Tang was reaching out to Daktronix. When she came to Brookings on December 12 and 13, she met with a variety of people at Daktronix. She had a breakfast meeting. She had a lunch meeting. By her own admission, in the appendix, page 33, she had at least 4 hours of business meetings at Daktronix. She toured the facility. She had lunch with the president, Jim Morgan, and 10 others, according to her own affidavit at appendix 43. She pitched her ties to China, particularly in the Zibai economic zone, with the Zibai railway station and 40 other sites for signage, and she pitched the merits of doing business through her. The meeting was left with Ling Tang volunteering, agreeing to furnish Daktronix a business plan for her work in China, which she in fact did, and that's at appendix 11 through 14. On a motion to dismiss, of course, the facts are to be viewed in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. And here, looking at the Kurtenbach affidavit, the Morgan affidavit, the declaration of Daniel Chase, and looking at the facts in the light most favorable to Daktronix, there is clear evidence of the plaintiff, or of Ling Tang and LBW Tech reaching out to Daktronix, coming to Brookings for meetings, pitching the Zibai Economic Zone as the place where Daktronix should develop its business rather than the Pudong Economic Zone, and making representations to Daktronix about the extent of her connections and the ability to get this refund of $26,000 that Daktronix had paid for rent of property in the Pudong Economic Zone.
What this does, I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, but I'm still hung up on the fact that this is a consulting contract, which is a little bit different than a lot of the other cases where you really are providing activities within that state. And her activities really aren't with South Dakota. Are they, or do we redefine how activities for purposes of jurisdiction here? Are activities different when you deal with a consulting contract?
I think it is very significant here that it is a consulting contract, not a one-time sale of a product, but an ongoing relationship where she makes reports to Daktronix and Brookings, has an ongoing relationship, receives payment from Daktronix monthly, the payments coming from Brookings, submits information on her expenses to Brookings and gets reimbursed from Brookings. Those are all very significant points in this case that distinguish it from, for example, Denver Truck. It is an important point here that the services are to be performed in China, but both of these parties are U.S. citizens. I believe there is concurrent jurisdiction in California and South Dakota, but they're certainly looking at the record as established here, there's jurisdiction in South Dakota. Daktronix indeed did pay her from Brookings. When she had a disagreement about what Daktronix was paying her, she phoned to Brookings. She communicated with Brookings by email, submitted reports to people in Brookings. She phoned people in Brookings both before coming to Brookings, after the trip to Brookings that she made, and during the consulting relationship. Under these circumstances, there is a substantial connection to South Dakota. She could reasonably anticipate being hailed into court in South Dakota. After all, she has entered into a consulting agreement with a business that's based in Brookings, South Dakota. She's been there. She's communicating with people in the performance of that consulting agreement. Her contacts are certainly not random, fortuitous, or attenuated with the state of South Dakota.
So how do you respond, though, to the Burger King language that negotiation of a single contract is not enough?
Well, there is more than just negotiation of a single contract here.
Well, Andrea,
the performance of the contract, she has contacts with South Dakota. Was there? I would add, there are claims here for deceit and negligent misrepresentation, which are extra contractual claims, that relate to representations that she made both in South Dakota and through communications with those in South Dakota about her ability to get this refund that Daktronics had made on a lease in the Pudong Economic Zone and the activities that she was undertaking in China. So there is more also, that's the second point, there is more involved here than a mere breach of contract. The third count is contract-based, but the first two counts in the complaint are tort-based. The subject matter of this action does flow from the activities of Ling Tang in communicating with Brookings and entering, or Daktronics and Brookings and entering into the commercial relationship with Daktronics.
Did Daktronics ever ship any products to China as a result of her working for Daktronics in China?
The answer to that is not in the record, so I can only say, Justice Avers, I believe not. Although there is a dispute over whether a Fushan, I believe, soccer installation was as a consequence of her activities, or as Daktronics is convinced, came to Daktronics through China Sports Inc., I believe is the name.
Daktronics have any manufacturing plant outside of Brookings, South Dakota?
Yes, I believe so. Well, I believe it has one in the Far East, Your Honor.
One where?
In the Far East, I believe.
Okay.
Although that, likewise, is not in the record. It is not, I believe, not in China. I believe Malaysia, Your Honor. For the reasons that Ms. Cundy ably stated, and as I have mentioned, there is personal jurisdiction over the defendants. They have invoked the benefits and privileges of South Dakota law through their numerous contacts with Daktronics in South Dakota. The court should reverse. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.